Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
Hey, Ted Stevens, what should we tell the friends back home?
Tell them all I'm going to enjoy this wonderful day, that's all.
Got a beautiful feet.
Former Senator Ted Stevens would love his old job back. A judge clears the senator of corruption charges and threatens to throw the book at federal prosecutors. Oh, there's a bright golden haze on the Justice Department. That's your takeaway.
All across America, this is The Takeaway with John Hockenberry and Adora Udoji from WNYC and PRI.
Good morning, everyone. It's Wednesday, April 8th. I'm still Fred Hockenberry. John Hockenberry with a cold, that is.
And good morning. I'm Femi Nightingale. Adora Udoji is away spending time with her new baby. So coming up this hour, the SEC tackles short selling on Wall Street, and the NCAA says it puts academics first. But 42% of black men who play Division I basketball don't graduate. Are they going pro or going nowhere? And the tables have turned in the case of former Alaskan Senator Ted Stevens, from the hunter to the hunted. We'll talk about what's in store for the prosecutors. Those stories coming up, but first, headlines.
Three members of Congress met with former Cuban President Fidel Castro yesterday. This is Fidel's first known meeting with U.S. officials since his emergency surgery in July of 2006. Congresswoman Barbara Lee was among the delegation. She's met Fidel Castro on past trips and says his health is not as dire as rumored.
He has been ill, but I think we will agree that he was very healthy, very energetic, and very clear thinking, and he was very engaging.
Illinois has a new congressman. Chicago Democrat Mike Quigley has won the Illinois seat left vacant by President Obama's chief of staff, Rahm Emanuel. Quigley won with 70% of the vote, and he'll now represent most of the north side of Chicago. Femi?
President Obama ended his eight-day trip abroad with a surprise visit to Baghdad yesterday, and that's where he repeated his pledge to end the war in Iraq. He also urged Iraqi leaders to incorporate ethnic and sectarian factions into the government. He returned to Washington early this morning. And the Yukon Huskies are now the women's NCAA basketball champs. The team beat the Louisville Cardinals 76-54. The game was tied midway through the first half, but then Yukon took the lead and never looked back. Yukon center Tina Charles.
We snap back to reality and realize if we don't play well, we could lose the game. This is a good team that we were playing against in Louisville, and I'm just excited.
You can hear it. Charles.
She's excited.
Yeah. Yep. Charles led the team with 25 points and 19 rebounds. And this is UConn's sixth national title.
Huge stomp. Same-sex marriage is now legal in Vermont. It took the state legislature one day to overturn Governor Jim Douglas's veto of a bill legalizing gay marriage. Vermont is now the first state to legalize same-sex marriage by legislation instead of by court ruling. The Dow and S&P both dropped more than 2% yesterday. Corporate earnings are giving everyone the jitters on Wall Street. The Dow kicks off at 77.90. The S&P starts trading at 8:16. So if you've got a blog, your life is on Facebook, and you're constantly texting personal details all around the internet, what do you tell your kids? And how do you draw the line? And, you know, kids may know a lot more than you think. Call 877-8-MY-TAKE or mytakeatthetakeaway.org and give us your strategy for how to protect private information from your kids.
The Takeaway is made possible by Liberty Mutual's Responsibility Project, encouraging discussion about what it means to do the right thing. ResponsibilityProject.com.
The Takeaway is supported by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and by the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation, advancing journalistic excellence in the digital age. More information about the Foundation's digital initiatives at KnightFoundation.org.
You're listening to The Takeaway with John Hockenberry and Adora Udoji.
Good morning, everyone. Well, markets fell yesterday. A little blippy volatility in advance of corporate earnings, which are expected not to be terribly good. But what do you make of that? You know, if you're the kind of person who thinks the market will never go up again, we would call you, Femi, a pessimist, right?
Yes, absolutely.
Now, if you're going to say, you know, the market's going to go down for a while, we would probably call you a realist, right?
Yeah, pragmatic.
But if you make millions and millions of dollars betting that the stock market would go down, we have a very special name for you. You're a short seller, and the Securities and Exchange Commission doesn't like them so much. The SEC meets today to unveil several proposals aimed at restricting short selling. It's, as we just referred, is a technique used by investors to profit from falling stock prices, and it has the tendency to make them fall even further, maybe if it's not warranted. Joining us now is John Coffey, professor at Columbia Law School. He's director of the Law School's Center on Corporate Governance. He joins us from his home. Professor Coffey, thanks for being with us.
Good morning. Thank you.
Help us to understand how you can make lots of money betting that stocks go down without getting into puts and calls too arcane a way.
Basically, you make money by buying low and selling high, and you can do that in either direction. You can sell first and buy later at a lower price to cover that sale. That's short selling. And if the price is going to go down, then the way to make money is to sell first and buy later.
Now, the pressure that this puts on, particularly bank stocks, has caused the Securities and Exchange Commission to worry. What is, first of all, the rule that's in place to restrict short sellers, and how is the SEC going to take another look at this today?
Well, the SEC last year, briefly for a 30-day period, did bar all short selling in financial stocks. That was a short-term rule. They've also barred something called naked short selling, which is a more abusive practice. But the SEC liberalized short selling 2 years ago, back in 2006, actually, when they said that they would abolish their traditional uptick rule. That rule had been there for 50 years, and it essentially said you can only sell short if the market is rising or level. As soon as the market heads down, short selling is barred till the next uptick in the opposite direction. That restrained short selling. The SEC abolished that in the belief that an efficient market should have both optimists and pessimists equally unfettered to trade as they saw fit.
And is that what's happening now in the market?
Well, the view of the business community, which is pushing very hard for further restrictions on short selling, is that in periods of market stress, short sellers can create a self-fulfilling prophecy by putting the market under pressure and causing other shareholders to fear further price declines. The SEC is a little divided on what it wants to do here, and I think their basic impulse is to try to make short selling more of a counter-cyclical policy by restricting it during periods of market stress.
All right, well, there are two things to ask, really, here. On the one hand, does the SEC have the ability to, it seems in some sense, regulate the psychology of the market, say, you know, regulate to the extent of forcing everyone to take antidepressants to keep the market from falling lower? It seems that's what this is kind of like.
Well, the SEC can't do that. Obviously, such efforts could well prove counterproductive. I think the SEC could try to restrict short selling to periods of market enthusiasm. That is, if you were to adopt what I'll call a circuit breaker rule that says if the market in a particular stock falls 15%, then there can be no more short selling that day. I think you give investors some insurance that there won't be an artificial pressure caused by those who want to panic the market.
Well, ultimately, though, it seems that the SEC is being very reactive here, and that what is possibly required is for Congress to take a much broader look, as Secretary Geithner has suggested on a couple of occasions, at retooling the entire regulatory scheme of the Securities and Exchange Commission. First of all, do you think that's a good idea, likely to happen, and how would it happen?
I think that's a very necessary idea. Let's give some focus to it, though.
Yeah, yeah.
But I think Secretary Geithner and the Treasury Department and the prior administration and much of the world right now, looking at the G20 group, believes is that we need a systemic risk regulator. We have to move beyond simply worrying about disclosure and transparency, important as those topics are, and have one agency or a collection of agencies authorized to regulate the capital structure, leverage, debt-to-equity ratio, and safety and soundness of all financial institutions.
Okay, Professor, just hold on one second. I'm one of your grad students, and I'm a little shaky, all right? Systemic risk regulator. How is that different from some giant, huge sort of rating agencies that evaluates everything from mortgages to stocks?
Well, no, the systemic risk regulator is really something like the Federal Reserve writ large. The Federal Reserve has authority over banks and bank holding companies. But with the convergence of financial institutions, there are now a lot of quasi-banks, hedge funds, insurance companies like AIG, investment banks, and new entities we haven't even seen yet, all of which do the same thing as banks. And the real meaning to systemic risk is that there's a possibility of these interlinked institutions experiencing a kind of cascade of falling dominoes under which the failure of one pulls down all the other dominoes that are entangled with it. That's the role of the systemic risk regulator, to try to ensure a kind of financial adult supervision over these institutions that are too big to fail.
But, Professor Coffey, weren't hedge funds created to get out from under existing regulations, and won't bankers and financiers find some way to get out from under even a new umbrella, as broad as it might be?
Well, I think that depends on what authority you give the systemic risk regulator. If it is told that it can decide that any institution is systemically significant and therefore falls within its ability to have oversight over their capital adequacy and their safety and soundness, that's a kind of prudential financial regulation, very different from what the SEC does, which is fundamentally a disclosure and enforcement agency. And I think that's something that's coming around the world today, as we're recognizing that the costs of a financial institution failing are just too great. If you're too big to fail, then you've got to be regulated so that you don't fail.
Now, a lot of people who look at the SEC say, in fact, all I really want the SEC to do is prevent another Bernard Madoff. Why should regulation be beyond simply, backstopping corruption and the kinds of Ponzi schemes that the Madoff scandal is all about?
Well, I think that's what the SEC is best at. Every institution has its own special competence. I think the SEC, when it works well, is a good enforcement agency, a good disclosure agency. I don't think it's capable of what I'll call financial oversight of the safety and soundness of financial institutions. That's more the role of the classic banking regulator, such as the Federal Reserve. And we're going to have a world in which we'd likely to have these two agencies coming into possibly conflict or possibly interaction, but they're both going to have a role with respect to those financial institutions that could destabilize our entire economy by their failure.
Professor Coffey, I don't mean to be annoying here, but you did just say that the thing that the SEC does best is prevent Madoffs. That's a sad commentary.
Traditionally what they're best at.
Ouch.
They really are a disclosure agency. They're not an agency that tells financial institutions that they need more capital or their debt-to-equity ratio is too high.
Well, but finally, looking at this bank stimulus package and bank rescue plan that has come out of Treasury and all of the headlines that we've had over the last 6 months, it seems as though Treasury is much more comfortable keeping Congress out of this, attempting to use the Fed's balance sheet to regulate the banks and to help the banks without congressional oversight. What makes you think they're going to invite Congress in and do something that would really rewrite regulations from top to bottom?
Well, what they did propose last week was this resolution authority so that they could use a quick form of bankruptcy reorganization without going through the long bankruptcy process. And what they proposed was that all systemically significant financial institutions be subject to a very quick financial reorganization if they become insolvent. This is all a response to the Lehman failure, which has convinced much of the world that we can't go through a 10-year process of reorganizing a very large financial institution, but have to do it much quicker. And so they were seeking legislation there. But I think you're right. They probably are trying to avoid Congress to a degree. I think the public-private partnership proposal is essentially a way to avoid having to go back to Congress and seek greater funding authority.
All right, Professor, before we go, I hate to get into the predictions game, but I can't resist asking you, what do you think the SEC is going to do today?
I suspect they're going to take an intermediate position. They may put out several proposals, but I think rather than simply reinstating the uptick rule, they would prefer to try to put in a circuit breaker system under which we would have an uptick rule to kick in only when a particular stock has fallen some percentage level. That is what I'll call a counter-cyclical policy, which would restrict short selling during periods of market stress. And I think that's probably the safer compromise.
Well, and the futures trading on Wall Street suggests that there's a cautious look ahead at what the SEC is going to do. Thanks for helping me through all that, Professor.
My pleasure.
Would you say I pass?
you get an excellent grade.
All right, John Coffey, professor at Columbia Law School. He's the director of the Law School Center on Corporate Governance. Thinking about what the Securities and Exchange Commission is going to do today when they relook at the uptick rule and other consequences of short selling on Wall Street and world markets.
You can email us at mytake@thetakeaway.org or call us toll-free at 877-8-MYTAKE.
869-8253.